welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader.
And you can run, but you can't hide, or can you? This is old minute 105, we're having this big battle in a great big, what looks like, I don't think of this as a cockpit, it's more like a lobby. Hal, give us the rundown on this big action scene.
All right, this big action scene in this very big airplane. Minute 105. In the Valkyrie's cockpit, the Red Skull, his crimson face contorted with fury, glares at Steve Rogers. "You could have the power of the gods," he roars, firing a blue energy bolt that misses Steve. "Yet you wear a flag on your chest, and you think you fight a battle of nations." Another shot streaks past, lighting up the girders of the ship. "I have seen the future, Captain." He fires again, missing. "There are no flags." "Not my future," Steve retorts, executing somersaults across the cockpit floor, dodging the barrage of energy bolts. Spotting an opening, Steve hurls his vibranium shield with full force, striking the Red Skull and sending him crashing into the Tesseract reactor. The device fractures, spilling electric blue plasma energy everywhere. The Red Skull staggers to his feet, staring at the shattered reactor. "What have you done?" "No!" he cries, seizing the glowing Tesseract. Unearthly tentacles of energy erupt, painting a cosmic tapestry of stars and nebulae across the cockpit ceiling. As he grips the cube, his hand and arm begin dissolving into pure energy, a howling noise rising from the Tesseract as a river of blue light streams upward.
Sounds like a bad day for the Red Skull.
Yeah, so don't mess with the Tesseract.
Yeah.
Red and blue are not mixing in this situation.
I have a comment from a voice never heard of before on this podcast. My wife, Karen, was looking over my shoulder as I watched this minute, and she saw the Red Skull grabbing the thing, and she said, "He's gross."
Good eye.
She is not wrong.
She's an incisive critic.
Yes, indeed. He is gross. You know, that sends me back to the halcyon days of youth, where I was with over at my buddy John, and I were at his girlfriend's house, and we were all friends, and we're watching something like Nightmare on Elm Street, and Jill's mom Connie is there, and I know she's not listening to this, but if she does, she would appreciate the memory from 1984 or 85. So we're watching some sort of 2-bit horror movie, and there's, you know, lots of sort of gratuitous slaughter and stuff like this, and after one, you know, after the like 20th horrific murder in whatever this silly little movie was, she just frowns and looks at the screen and goes, "That's so mean." You're right. You're not wrong.
That's right.
It was a wonderful dose of perspective there.
Concept you were saying, Jill, I was trying to figure out. Now he's John and she's, so it's Jack and Jill.
So John and Jill dated for quite a while. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I
was just Jill thinking. And Eric dated for a while, and you've met Eric. So that got a little bit complicated. Jill and I went to homecoming, but just as friends, because it just wasn't clear which of my other friends she would be dating at the moment. So she and I went as pals.
Wow. other thing, Brian, I don't know. I'm sure Hal, you've done this, but Brian, have you ever been inside the Spruce Goose when it was in Los Angeles? Okay.
No, I haven't.
The cockpit of the Spruce Goose looks surprisingly like the inside of this cockpit. We never really talked about the front end of the flying wing here.
Right.
But I mean, all it's missing is the beach balls. There were Howard Hughes, when he was worried about taking this the Spruce Goose, or Hercules as he called it, he didn't like the name Spruce Goose, but when they were taking it out in the bay there at Long Beach Harbor, he was worried about it sinking, and so their instant solution was go out and buy a bunch of beach balls and stuff them in every crevice. Never had to be used, but it's always a good thought.
Yeah, you never know. But with all that wood, I wouldn't think sinking would be the worst the first calamity to come to mind. I mean, more worried about fire.
It was essentially a boat with wings, right?
Yeah, that's quite literally a flying boat. The it's not the same size scale wise, but it's up there. The Martin Mars flying boat has that similar feeling, and I'm always reminded. And forgive me, I don't think I've mentioned this before, but this did come up recently. So if I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry. But I remember when my dad transitioned with United Airlines from the 737, you know, modestly sized twin engine airliner, straight to the 747. And he came back after his all his checkouts and everything else. And, you know, I asked him, well, what's it like to fly? And he just said, it's like flying a place. You know, it wasn't like a vehicle anymore. It was so big and you're so far removed from everything. And certainly this flying wing carries those, you know, that same sense and those same dimensions, this cavernous flight deck. And it, of course, it's got that, you know, if this were a U.S. design, we'd see less canopy framework. We'd see maybe a bubble canopy or a cleaner windscreen or something like that. But it's German, so it's got to be heavy and armored and lots of framework in it, like looking at an ME-109 versus a Mustang or a Spitfire.
I keep thinking what George Kennedy said in you were talking about the 747, what George Kennedy said about the 747 in Airport 75. He said, just remember when you're landing, you're still, when your wheels touch down, you're still three stories up.
Yeah, wow. That's exactly right. Ed talked about that, how disconnected you feel and you're way, way up there and the wheels are miles behind you. So, but Red Skull isn't going to have to worry about landing this airplane at this point.
No.
Now, is he trying? The question I'm having in this whole scene is he trying to convert Captain America at this point, or is he just berating him for not taking Red Skull's side in the Uber human thing?
That's one of my notes. Yeah, and I don't think so. That's exactly the question I asked: is Red Skull still trying to turn Steve to the dark side? I don't think so. I think they're past that point. I do think the Red Skull is genuinely befuddled by how a fellow Ubermensch like Steve could remain loyal to puny ideas like democracy and liberty. He just doesn't get it. And it's a real interesting contrast in their points of view.
Yeah, I agree. I think there could still be a last little dangling element, attempt at recruitment, or it's just, as you said, Brian, he can't conceive of this. It's like, like you're in an argument and you are clearly not hearing my point, my side of it. And if nothing else, I'm still angry enough to try to convince you that I'm right. Even if that doesn't convince you to change what you're doing, I'm so obviously right. How can you be so stupid for somebody who is otherwise, you know, a super soldier?
Yeah, I like that. What's your take, Jim?
Yeah, I'm thinking Khan, Noonien, and Singh. It's just, how do you, you know, I'm a Superman. And you have to bow to my superior intellect, and you should be a superior intellect because we had the same super formula. So why aren't you digging this? It's like arguing flat Earth theories and things. It's just he can't quite grasp the fact that you know these people, these Ubermensches, as you were saying, should be in charge. And and he's still like he said he's stuck on the idea of nation states, and that you have to promote a certain other kinds of interactions with other humanity. No, there should be one idea, and that's coming out of Red Skull.
Yeah, well, and that dovetails so nicely with the rise of Hydra. You know how we start with Hydra as a you know as a sort of a subset of Nazis, and then they expand beyond that. That you know that first time we see Berlin on their list of targets and things, and you realize that the whole mission statement behind Hydra is they see themselves as something already is something bigger than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And where, you know, and I'm assuming that Red Skull recruited these guys out of the biggest true believers in the SS that he lured them away. And these guys were the, not the cream of the crop, but the, you know, the bottom of the barrel scraping the corner edges out of like the worst of humanity that would believe, well, yeah, we just got to get everybody to act, you know, it's Sith-like. It's just, you've got to go along with the guy at the top.
Right.
They would have been the most physically fit. They would have been the top 10% performers within their Nazi hierarchy, I think. Those are the people you would have recruited.
Well, right. Do you think it would have been the physical or would it have been the most emotionally pliable? I don't know.
Oh, that too. That too, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. He needs unquestioning followers.
And I think, yeah, there's a pretty clear mix of that. And I think you're going to the people had, you know, sniffing out those people who say, okay, we're all Nazis here now. And please don't take this recording out of context, Jim. But hey, we're all Nazis here, but come on, who thinks we're not going far enough? You know, show of hands, who thinks we could do, you know, we could do more with these twisted ideals. And you find people, yeah, if there's, you know, if there's one thing I think is we need to be super Nazis.
I think that's the tagline for our advertising campaign. We're all Nazis here. Hal Nazis Bryan.
Hal yeah. Bryan. Yes.
I think I've got my new ringtone for Hal.
That's perfect. That's
well, you know, and the other thing, he's talking about wearing a, you know, wearing a star on his chest and things like that. And it's like, well, Cap could have responded like, well, you have this thing about six-legged octopuses. I don't get that either.
Exactly. Yeah. Have you ever been to an aquarium, Mr. Skull? If that is your real name.
Yeah. And it's like, didn't Hydra have 9 heads? And not, you know, anyway, they could both wind up sitting, you know, 3 hours past, and they're both sitting on that stairway going down the middle going, you know, I think what we need to do is redesign logos to understand.
Right. He goes, yeah, we'll have sketch pads and whiteboards and they're, going over. Yeah.
What if there was a red, white, and blue octopus and it had the proper number of tentacles, but 2 extra ones were giving you a hug?
Yeah. Now you've joined them with in the dark side. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
I had a question about, and I think I know the answer to this, but I'm wondering why the Tesseract decides to open up a space-time portal at this moment. Question was it damaged? And my additional thought as the comic book expert here is, if this were the Cosmic Cube, as the same object was in the comic books for 70 years, it would be reacting to the thoughts of whoever holds it. It would be reading the Red Skull's mind and trying to give him his deepest desires. And I'm wondering if maybe in this context, the Cosmic Cube is reading the Red Skull's desire for cosmic knowledge and universal power and trying to give it to him, but in a monkey's paw kind of way that backfires. Yeah. I'm not sure what's going on with the Tesseract in this scene.
And I was also wondering, is it interacting with the Soul Cube? Because it seemed, or with the soul soul stone, excuse me. Yeah, but there's not a cube for, they haven't put that one in a cube. But I was thinking he's got to do that because he winds up as being, for lack of a better word, he's Pluto. I would say he was more like Charon. The gatekeeper of eternity.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how, I was just wondering where that fits in the mythos. It'll be interesting. I have not seen the Captain America novelization, but I would think there's some kind of interaction between all of the stones of how, and like you said, a monkey's paw version of, they kind of twist things so that you get your just desserts.
Well, of course, right. They had no idea when they made this movie that later, years later, the Red Skull would be guarding the soul stone on the planet, whose name I forget, Vormir, something like that.
Yeah, Vormir, I think, yeah.
That was out of left field how he ended up there. But I guess when you fall through a time space portal, you can end up anywhere.
Yeah.
That's what my grandmother always said.
Yeah.
Have some more cookies.
That was my mom's advice. Look out for those time space portals, man. And quicksand. Look out for the quicksand and the time space portals.
I'm still terrified of quicksand, even though it's really turned out to be an absolute non-event in my life. I'm still convinced.
I get edgy about the Bermuda Triangle, although that seems to have disappeared. Nobody talks about the Bermuda Triangle anymore.
I haven't heard anything about that at all.
It disappeared into the Bermuda Triangle.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Ooh. The snake eats its own tail.
Yeah, I'm going to need a minute.
So obviously, plot-wise, this is a fitting fate for the Red Skull. We're about to see his ambition swallow him whole. But I kind of don't get why now. The Tesseract's been around a long time, and we have not yet seen it open up new universes to its holder.
And I just wondered if there was something about it where it's been, you know, the Tesseract has been sort of held captive, for want of a better term. It's been, you know, it's been controlled. It's been putting these things in. And if it does have any kind of self-awareness or will, like, to me, I looked at this scene as like, okay, the Tesseract has now been unleashed. It's been released. Whatever control you had, temporary control you had or thought you had over it, it's out of it now. And now it's just sort of doing its thing. And as you said, Brian, is it a monkey's paw? Does it have is there some sense of some justice force that's guiding it, or is it just I'm out of the box and, you know, puny biped, you can't control me any longer?
I like that very much. I think that's a nice interpretation of what we see here.
Yeah, it's an evil djinn. I mean, it's a genie out of the bottle.
Yeah.
So, and I Red Skull, like every evil genius, they just don't know what they've done. And I mean, Red Skull says, "What have you done?" He doesn't know what Cap's done. So, you know, I guess, you know, getting this just reward of evaporating, which is, by the way, just such an amazing effect. That is so beautiful. I love, you know, later on in the whole MCU series when they do the Thanos snap effect with people blowing away like dry leaves, but this thing where he's just kind of turning into an ELO album cover, he's turning into a rainbow and just getting sucked through the ceiling into a what looks like a planetarium. It's just very pleasant to watch.
It's sort of out of the blue.
Yes.
As you said, he had album covers, but in reverse.
Yes,
out of
yes.
the blue comes.
And he's also basically he's facing the music, too.
Yeah, so, he really is. Now, come on, don't bring me down here, Jim, okay?
Okay, Mr. Blue Sky.
Yeah, I was going to go Mr. Blue Sky.
Yeah. Yeah. Blue Sky. Enough of this strange magic, all right?
But, you know, he does suffer a similar fate that Loki did in the first Thor movie. I think the Thor came first in this movie. Do I have that right? Is that the chronology?
Yeah, just barely.
Yes. Yeah.
I always Iron think Man of it as Thor. The other way around. I always think of this as the second for some reason. But yeah, Thor was
but Loki fell off the Rainbow Bridge into a swirling eddy of space nebula and so forth. So, and ended up somewhere else. So I think this is for this period of the MCU, this is how we get rid of the bad guys.
Yeah,
you just time. Made me think of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when there's references to eddies in the space-time continuum. It's like, he is, you know, and who is this Eddie, and what's he doing there?
Well, obviously, you know, Red Skull had no towel with him, so that's the end of that.
Right, and he panicked.
Yeah,
he is not a hoop frood. He knows does not know where his towel is.
Wow.
It is nice to see, though, at least at this point, you know, we were talking back and forth, you know, any recruitment still trying to happen, yes or no, but we're not doing that, the traditional villain, you know, final monologue where I've got to explain everything. He's still arguing his case, but he doesn't have a PowerPoint deck and he's not up there doing molesting. This is my evil plan right before you accidentally defeat me forever. And
a semi-monologue. He's kind of getting ready for a soliloquy, but not quite there.
He's engaged in an active debate at the very least.
Before we get out of this minute, I just want to congratulate the stuntman playing Chris Evans's role, because that jump where he does a somersault off the shield, he jumps off the four-step staircase, bounces, and he lands head first on top of the shield as he starts getting up. That one little sequence is one of the most amazing little stunts I've seen in the whole film, and it's definitely practical. And I hope he had a lot of ibuprofen with him when that ended, because it looked like he came down somewhere between his neck and his shoulder on that thing. I hope that was just one take.
On a rubber shield, probably.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah, rubber floor, everything.
Yeah, but you're right. That's a beautiful stunt. I really appreciate you calling that out. It's well done.
Wow. Well, we're going to get into some cosmic stuff in the next episodes, so stand by for that. But we do appreciate you joining us here. If you'd like to continue the conversation, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America Minute listeners base over on Facebook. If you do like the show, please, as I always ask you, don't forget to subscribe, leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our great big website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. We do have some really great guests coming up, so stay tuned. And be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.